This recording is a production of Anabaptist Financial. More recordings are available on our website at www.afweb.org under Stewardship Resources or by calling 800-653-9817. This presentation was recorded at a Deacon and Trustee Seminar held on August 5, 2025 in Arthur, Illinois.
Greetings, everybody. I wondered a little bit, we look at the schedule and the order of speakers, and I opened the email when it showed up here a couple weeks ago on the schedule of speakers and seeing that Orv and I are bringing up the tail end. And so you can look at it two ways. You can look at it as we can sit here and sweat all day, or if we've been in the ministry for some years, sometimes we learn that sometimes it's easier to have the main part in church versus the opening, only because of the person in the opening or the person reading the scripture kind of sets the tone for the day. And so, you know, I had prepared a PowerPoint, and I still am going to walk through it. But as every speaker got up there today, most of us were probably writing down some thoughts here and there. And so I think actually Orv and I probably have maybe the best spots because we can just build off of what all the other speakers said. Some interesting stuff. But so stuff that I wrote down that I thought I'm just going to start, I'm not, before I even started my presentation, was, you know, we live in a disposable world. Everything is the Amazon way. We want to order something, we want it on our doorstep tomorrow. We live in a disposable world, don't we? And we tend to get our priorities. We heard that from almost every speaker. We tend to get our priorities a little bit mixed up. And we spend so much time majoring on the minor things in life, don't we? We spend so much time majoring on the minor things in life. And when we leave, and it seems in our area, since spring, every time we turn around, there's somebody that's moved on, and all of a sudden they're our age. Chris thinks he's middle-aged, but we're not. And so we all of a sudden we see how fleeting life is. And another thing I wrote down, and I just had this thought again. There was a lot of talk about blessings. And I've shared this thought before. If God in that great beyond has a little baby that he's going to give to somebody, and he looks down through the blue sky, and he's going to place it somewhere. Where does he put it? Who does he give it to? Who does he entrust it to? And you know, the older we get, the more we realize that blessing, and I think I wrote that down when Roman was sharing where he grew up, and I was thinking about the 180-acre farm west of Shipshewana that I grew up on. 11 kids, had great parents. They're still living there. Dad's 91. But when God placed every one of us, where does he place people? And where's our accountability back to God? I wrote down that we all lack a little bit of self-awareness. Sometimes I think that we lack a lot of self-awareness. We heard about justification. We heard about do we Do we think we deserve? Do I think I deserve what I've got? What does this mean to someone like myself? How do we measure our success? My topic's on trust. I'm not sure where this is going, but how do we measure our success? And I just lately heard a minister say this, and we think sometimes we look around us and we look at people and we think that they're successful. We long for the you know, society places so much emphasis on monetary success, on fame, on fortune. Elvis Presley, this is what I just heard this a couple of days ago. In his final days of his life, and he showed up at concerts where there was mobs of people that were just their women just wanting to touch him. In an interview 3 days before he died, he said, "I'm a very lonely man." How do we measure success? How do we measure success? What does it mean to us? I've got, I wanted to start when Laverne called me about possibly doing a presentation on trust. I had done a few presentations over the years for Anabaptist Financial, but it was always on the business side, on vision and strategy, and this was on trust. This is what I told Laverne, that when I agreed to do it, I said, I'll probably get more out of this than anyone else will. And I almost promise you that every speaker over there, it's the way it is. Because we start researching, we can't help but see corners that need to be swept out. We see ourselves in some of these things, and so I'm going to talk a little bit about trust. And if I look at the definition of trust, it's a firm belief in a character, the ability, it's a strength or truth of someone or something. It's confident hope. And this wasn't part of my presentation. I wrote this down this morning because all of a sudden I'm like, this kind of fits in there. And there was a little bit of talk about Lazarus, but I when you talk about trust, and I thought about this when it was brought up in one of the presentations on where's God in our lives. We need help. We need God in our lives. We need Him to direct us. We get impatient, but this little story in the Bible on with Lazarus, if we start, and I'm going to try to do this really quick, if we start with Mary, and we think she was probably a prostitute on the street when she came in to behind and knelt behind Jesus and washed His feet and dried His hair. We all know that in Simon's house. We know that story. But where I'd like to go with that is there was a relationship built. There was a friendship established that day. Because the rest of, we read that, I think when Jesus would go through Bethany, he'd stay with Lazarus, with Mary, with Martha. He'd eat at their table. There was a relationship established. There was a trust established. They believed in him. One day Jesus traveled, I think a couple days journey, probably into another little city, and Lazarus got sick. Mary and Martha did a 911 call to Jesus. They need help. They need help. Lazarus, their brother, is sick. And Jesus didn't. He didn't come. Lazarus got real sick. And Jesus didn't come. Now let's put ourselves, if we're going to talk about trust, and in relationship, trust is built up. Can we only imagine what we would have thought had we been Mary and Martha and their friend Jesus, who they fed? They were friends. They needed help. And he didn't show up. He didn't show up. Lazarus died. They had viewing, and Jesus didn't show up. He never came. Can we imagine how we'd have done? How can this be? Is he no longer our friend? Is that what we do? In a Goshen paper the other week on a Saturday night, we've got a writer. I can't even think of what his name is. Some of you at home it might read that. Pastor's Pen, I think it's called. But he had an article in there on where was God in that Texas flood. Do we think he didn't know? Was he on vacation? What we find out from all of us, and we heard a lot about hurting people. We heard a lot about a lot of things. Where's God in these things? But God, he's not on our time. Why not? Because God is outside of time. He's outside of time. He's not in this realm. He's not in the minutes, the seconds, the months, the year. He's outside of time. So he's not on our time. They had funeral, and Jesus didn't show up. They buried Lazarus, and Jesus didn't show up. They come back from the grave, and if I have this story correct in my mind, they were still at the house, and there were still some of the other Jews from Jerusalem that were there comforting, just like we know how we do this. Funeral was over. They're still mourning. They're all doing that. Somebody looks up, and here comes Jesus, right on time. Here comes Jesus down the road, right on time. And in most of our lives, he's got a better plan. He's got a bigger plan. He knows what's right. Here comes Jesus. Does that happen in our lives? And sometimes we go through valleys and we think he's forgotten about us. He's not forgotten about us. Someday, sometime, he's going to show up on his time, and it's the right time. There's a song that says, for the God of the valley, God of the mountain is still God in the valley. God of the good times is still God in the bad times. The God of the day is still God in the night. He shows up on his time, but it's the right time. It's the right time. And so I think there's a trust. That we have to have, that God is bigger. One of the guys today said, we, especially us men, we got this right. And we discover we don't got this. We don't got this. And the older we get and the bigger our struggles and our heartaches are, and we have things that come up in our lives that are bigger than what we are, we don't got this. But he does. He does. You know, trust is one of the most, I think, expensive things. It's one of the true attributes of a Christian, in a Christian life. One of the most expensive things in the world is trust. Can take years to earn, and it takes but a second to lose. Trust, it's not a result. Trust is not a result. It's not a feeling. Trust is a result. It's not a feeling. It's a result. It's a result of lots of actions. It takes a lot of time to build up trust. But it can be lost in a split second. We all know that. We can't tell somebody. We can't walk up to somebody and say, you got to trust us. We've all done it in business and in our personal lives. If somebody walks in and says, they may even try to say, I'm a Christian too. We kind of hang on to our wallet, don't we? We can't tell somebody. It's something that's earned. It's a result. It's not just a feeling. It's a measurable and it's a crucial element, you know, of high-performing teams or in organizations. We see that it's a psychological safety. It's a place where we feel safe. I would challenge all of us. How many of us hang around with people that we don't like? How many of us hang out with people we don't like or people we don't trust? Not so much, right? We hang out with people that are our friends. Why? We feel safe. We feel safe. So, I was going to just say this, because when we measure our success, we tend to do it in monetary terms too much. We look at people, we plug people into different status levels. And in the end, we see it all the time. People amass much and they leave it all. They're gone. They're gone. This was probably 30 years ago. And most of you guys know Butch Chup and Lyle and these Chup guys, and they've done a handicap supper for a lot of years. This is an event that's done locally, and they'll fill the old antique building up there with handicaps, and it's a highlight for some of these handicaps. In fact, they're so excited, some of them, they can't tell them till the day of. They get so excited. But I'm not sure how they do it anymore, but 25 years ago, the Chup family, they went by age, and every year, one of them could invite their ministers from their church. And so Dwayne Chups were in our church at that time, and so us ministers got invited. So we're all four of us ministers are sitting at a table, and we've got handicaps on the other side. We don't know these guys. But they played bingo that night. They played bingo with the handicaps. And it's not about beating somebody. They played bingo till every handicap had won three prizes, had bingo three times. So it wasn't about somebody not getting something. Here's us ministers sitting there, and there was a handicap in front. He wasn't an Amish boy, but he was probably in his upper 20s. And we watched the excitement, you know, as they watched their board. And when he got bingo, he yelled bingo. And then they had a couple tables, three, five, six, eight tables filled. You know, they've got E&S. They had E&S, the store. And so it was all kinds of stuff. It was toys. It was stuff, you know. And this guy went up, and he came back, and he had a 5-pound bag of sugar. Sugar. He looked at us, and he said, "Mom uses this to bake cookies." He looked at his card, and he was excited again for bingo. The second time, he ran up, he got a little bag of candies, and he said his nephew and his nieces like this kind of candy. Is that what we would do? You know what I think I'd have done? I'd have probably circled all eight tables to make sure that I got probably, I'm not going to say the most expensive gift, but I most certainly wouldn't have got a bag of sugar. But when we die, what kind of nature would we rather have? Isn't that something? And we left there that night thinking, who's handicapped? I think his third thing was a 2-liter pop that he got, and that was for a family member as well. There was not a single thing that boy got that night that was for himself. Not a single thing. Is it any wonder that the last shall be first and the first shall be last? If you think about those things, so trust is the foundation of every successful team or organization. I believe that that picture was shown this morning. Sometimes we see what's at the top. We have no idea on the root system, the foundation, and what is actually producing that beautiful tree. I put this in here because we're all a product of something. What's culture? Culture is a broad social heritage or a group. It's a pattern of responses discovered, developed, or invented during the group's history of handling problems, which arise from interactions among members and between them and environment. I like this. The responses are considered to be not, the responses aren't the correct way. It says considered the correct way to perceive, feel, think, and act, and are passed on to new members. We're all a product of something. We're all a product of something. And we can talk about culture, but there's good culture and there's bad culture. There's good culture and there's bad culture. I like the story on culture because it's kind of funny, but it really says it like it is. There was a mother that every year she would make Thanksgiving dinner and for the family. Kids got married, she got older. We know how it is. They're not able to do things as good anymore. And one of the sisters said, "This year I'm doing Thanksgiving, Mom." She's like, "No, I'll do it." "No, we're going to do it. You've done it all these years. We're going to do it." So Thanksgiving morning comes around, and you know, this was a big deal to not have Thanksgiving at Mom's, and the sister was kind of probably worked up. So one of the other sisters came over to help her, and so they got the turkey ready to put in a roaster. And before they put the turkey in the roaster, the sister cut off the tail of the turkey. The one sister said, "I wonder why Mom always cut the tail off the turkey." I said, "I don't know, but when Mom gets here, we'll ask her." So when Mom got there, they asked their mom, "Why did you always cut off the tail of the turkey before you put it in a roaster?" And the mom said, "I never had a roaster big enough to put the whole turkey in." So that's culture. And sometimes we do things that are not the correct way. We just do them because that's the way we're taught. And so I think that if there's good culture, there's also bad culture. And we're all a product of something. We can say we're going to change, right? We can say we're going to change. We can say that we're going to turn over a new leaf. We see it time and time again. Culture trumps strategy. What's our life strategy? What's a strategy? It's hundreds of everyday decisions. Somebody else kind of said this. It's hundreds of everyday decisions we make on how we spend those resources that they talked about, the time, the money. That's our strategy. We can say, "No, we're going to do this." But our culture trumps that strategy. It's what we do. Culture trumps that strategy. It's established. You can take a good culture and you can move it into a bad culture. If we take the children of Israel, they were God's chosen people. They were saved and moved to Egypt. But in that 400 years, they became a generation of slaves. That was their culture. They no longer thought for themselves. They were a generation of slaves. And they watched as God miraculously did the plagues. And they actually seen where the firstborn was killed and how the very people that they had to serve beat them, actually gave them gold and told them to get out of there. But here they are. The first trial that they faced, they fell apart. Because of what? Lack of trust. Lack of trust. They were part of a culture. They weren't going to think on their own. And so they fell apart. We can imagine literally a couple million of them and facing 200 chariots with captains. They fell apart. And God still helped them. But when we talk about organizations or churches or family that have a culture with a lack of trust, how different would it have looked if the children of Israel, if somebody, one person would have raised his hand on the testing side of the Jordan and said, We got this. We got this because God said we got this. But that's not what they happened. They fell apart. They pouted. They groaned. They complained. God opened the Red Sea. We know the story. They all got safely on the other side. And here's where that culture or lack of trust, they actually sang a praise song, but they sang the right song on the wrong side. They sang the right song, a victory song, on the wrong side of the Red Sea. Is that how we do it? Can I trust on the testing side of something? I struggle. Can we sing? Can we, you know, can we be a Gideon? And if you think about that story and how different the next 40 years would have looked had somebody just said, we can do this. We got faith. Our God is bigger than all these things. But nobody did that. You know, there was remnants of that lack of trust in that culture. If you go back, and I don't know in what year this was, maybe this was, I think it's in 137 in Psalms where you can read it. And I'm getting off track here again, but you can read it in 137, I think, with the children of Israel. Time went on. They went through some mountains. They went through some valleys. But I think there was still part of that seed. They fell from God. And that chapter starts out by saying, for there we sat by the rivers of Babylon. They were led captive. The Babylonians had destroyed their homes. They killed their children. They took all the men. They were probably sitting there shackled on the rivers of Babylon, shackled. And they said, yea, we wept when we remembered Zion. They thought a home. They thought a home. And it says, we hung our harps on the willows thereof. Is that what we do? When the going gets tough, when we don't trust, they lost their song. I think that we can see on some of those stories how different the endings would have been had somebody just said, we can do this. God doesn't want us to throw in the towel. I wrote some things down here. So Ben Franklin said, tell me and I forget, teach me and I remember, involve me and I learn. There's a culture of trust. There's accountability, sharing in groups, successes and failures, owning problems, willing to address issues, correcting without deflecting. The biggest sin is covering up our problems. This robs the organization of an opportunity to improve. You know, how do you build trust? And we already said it's a result. We can't just tell somebody. We don't, on our first date, we don't ask that girl to marry us. She'd never do it, right? There has to be a level of trust. That builds. I read this deal in the Army. They have in the military, they are looking for the right people in the military. And so if you think about kind of what they're looking for, if at the bottom you have a low trust, a low performing, a low trust in the bottom corner, none of us are looking for that type of person, right? A low performer and a low trust. But if you go all the way up on the left side, this is how they showed it, and all the way up, you have a high performer but a low trust. Is that what we want? You kind of think that we want high performers. But that's not what the military wants. They'll go to the right side, and they'll do a medium. They're not looking for also not a low performer a low trust. They would rather have a medium performer with a high trust than a high performer with a low trust. How many of our businesses, if somebody walked into our business, if we have a bunch of employees and we talk about trust and they say, who's the guy nobody likes? Could they all point to the same person? Would they all point to the same person? Maybe. And there's a good chance that that person is a high performer. He gets it done. Maybe he sells more than any of them, but he's not fun to be around. And you could probably ask that same group of people, who in this organization do we trust the most? And they would all point to the same person. Could that happen? It probably does. So I think that it's critical that we don't, and there's no measurables. You don't see bonuses paid out. How many people's bonuses systems are paid out on high trust? Is that a measuring metric for a monetary bonus or a recognition? Do we at Christmas parties say so-and-so wins first place, or we're going to give him a bonus for a blue, I don't care what it is, for high trust? But there's all kinds of stuff we pay to a high performer. It's kind of backwards, isn't it? It's kind of backwards. So trust in leadership. Get rid of egos in our companies. Do we want to be missed after we leave? It's better to be good than look good. I'm going to have to go faster. It's amazing we can accomplish. No one is... Destroy empire building in organizations. I like this little story that fits in. When we... Sometimes, because we're business people, and I know that this is both spiritual, it's material, it's business, it's church, it's all of... But if we think of it in terms of trust and leadership, do we sometimes overthink it? Do we sometimes think that we're these great entrepreneurs? We got this. There were some neighborhood boys that decided to build a clubhouse, a treehouse in their yard. And they worked a long time to build a treehouse in one of the backyards of this neighborhood. And they wanted, when they got it all done, these boys, if they, this is now their club, they're going to have rules. Every club has rules, right? And this is a very simple way of stating something that kind of works in our marriage. It works in our businesses. It works in our churches. They came up with 3 rules. Those little boys did. The first rule was nobody act big. The second rule was nobody act small. And their third rule that they all agreed on was everybody act medium. And isn't that something? That kind of works, doesn't it? If we just all act medium. I stuck this in here because I feel like we can relate to a blended family. We have a his, hers, mine. We see it in divorces and remarriages and kids and how blood went thick in the water, and sometimes it's tough. But isn't it the same thing in our churches? We're a blended family. It's a his, hers, and a mine. It's the same thing in our business world. It's a his, hers, and mine. We've got vendors, we got customers, we've got employees. And it's like a big, big blended family. How do we get along? How do we treat people the same or right? You know, and I just got this off of a recent Gallup poll. 81% of the employees don't trust their managers. They don't quit. Most of these people are not quitting their companies. They're quitting their leaders. They're quitting their leaders. You know, I had a speaker tell this story, and I'm gonna say it fast as I can. This this guy went to Las Vegas. I've never been to Vegas, and I don't plan to go to Vegas. But he was on a business trip. It was at Vegas, in Vegas, and he stayed at a hotel called the Four Seasons. I think it's probably a famous hotel. And he was also a speaker, had a topic, and it was about leadership and all that. But the first morning, he goes down into the foyer, and there was a coffee shop down there. High-end, this was a really, really upscale hotel, and there was a male barista. The guy's name was Noah, young man, helped him with coffee, but he was so friendly, so helpful, that this guy couldn't help himself. He said, "You must like your job." Noah said, "I love my job." He said, "What do you like about your job? What do you love about your job?" He said, "Everybody here, doesn't matter if it's my manager, any manager, if I'm on second floor, third floor, anywhere I go, if I pass a manager, he'll ask me, 'How's your day going? Do you need anything? Can I help you?' Just love my job." Talk a little bit more, and he said, "I also work over at Caesar's Palace," which most of you guys maybe have heard that name. Again, I've never been there, but again, a famous hotel in Vegas. He said, "I work part-time over at Caesar's Palace." But that's a different story. He said, "There, I don't enjoy work because the managers are always finding fault. If you meet them in the hallway, you're either in the wrong place, you're doing it wrong, you're not fast enough or whatever. Don't like that place." I'm going to tell you, if we have a trusting team where people feel safe, if we can create a trusting team, and it can be church, home, it can be wherever we're at, where it was brought up, it's a huge thing where they can feel safe being vulnerable. They can raise their hand and say, "I made a mistake," or, "You promoted me to a job and I really don't know that I can handle this job. I need more training," or, "I'm having trouble at home and it's affecting my work. I'm scared." They can say all these things without fear of humiliation or retribution. Why? They feel safe. They can trust that they can do all those things, and their leaders are actually going to rush to help them. They're gonna help them through that. If we don't have a trusting team, what we have is a group of people, and we've all seen it. I think we've all been part of great trusting teams and teams that aren't trusting. If we do not have trusting teams, we'll have a group of people that are showing up every day for work. They're lying. They're faking. They're hiding. Does that really happen? It absolutely does. Why? Because they're scared. They're not going to tell you if they're hurting. They're not going to tell you if they can't do their job well. They're going to just fake it. Because they're afraid if they do, they're on the list for the next round of cuts. But you know, eventually, cracks will find themselves, will show up, and these organizations start to fail. And so, leadership is it's a lifestyle. It's not, if you create a trusting environment where people feel safe, you'll get employees like Noah, right? He's happy. If you create an environment where people don't trust each other, where there's backbiting, you'll get employees like Noah. You see, it's not about Noah. It's about us. It's about us. Same person. So leadership is a lifestyle. We don't decide one day we're going to go to the gym and work out for 9 hours and we get in shape. Doesn't work, does it? But I can almost promise you that if you go to the gym and you work out for 30 minutes every day, you will get in shape. But when we quit going to the gym, when we quit working out, what happens? We get out of shape. So it's a lifestyle. Isn't it the same way with our spiritual life? It's a lifestyle. It's a lifestyle. And the unfortunate part Leadership is something that is probably the only thing that we really can't delegate. If we're the owner, if we're the leader, if we want to be the leader, we can't really just delegate it, or we're no longer that leader. And we, again, we can't import backbones. We can't order a backbone from or Courage or all of these things from Amazon. Order it one day, it shows up the next. It's got to come from within. I had a presentation in a local with a group of businesses. The guy had a seminar, a company had a seminar, and he brought all his dealers in across the Midwest. And so as they do, they want to fill it in. And if they get somebody to talk, they'll get them. And so I had a topic on leadership and in business. And I talked about your employees and all these type of things. And I had intentionally left like 10 minutes at the end for question and answer. And in full disclosure, I had planted a couple of questions in the audience to get it kind of started, and it worked. And off to my left in the front row, there was a guy who raised his hand. He was from New York. It was actually an Amish guy from New York. Now, you got to remember, this room is filled up with business owners. And he said, because I talked about sharing their vision. You know, their employees have to buy in. He raised his hand, and I'm like, yep. He says, what if your employees aren't willing to do as you tell them? What am I going to say? I said, they don't, you mean they won't listen? Uh-uh. He was saying this in front of all these people. And I thought, poof, I don't know what I'm going to say, but I said, I don't know what to tell you except they're your employees. I know, but they won't listen. I said, I don't know what to tell you. You hired them. They're your employees. You need to look at your system. You need to look at your leadership. Maybe you're not paying enough to attract the right employees. Finally, everybody was kind of laughing. But isn't that the truth? It's not about us. Or it's not about that employee. It's about us. I put this in here because I thought we can all relate to it. How many of us as fathers, I think we all did it. Our kids, they come running. We come home from work and we pick them up, and we can even throw them up and they laugh, and we catch them and we throw them up and they keep coming back for more. Why? Because they trust us. Isn't it amazing? They'll even jump off of a wall. They would jump off of a pier in the hands of a father standing in the water because of what? They trust us. How critical is that broken if we break that trust? And it would, if we did it one time, if we just backed up one time and let that child fall, can we imagine how long it would take, if ever, before that child would do it again? That's how critical trust is. So at its core, trust is about risk. I had this story, and I need to. I don't want to take up Mr. Mullet's time, but I wanted to. This I seen this hurt kind of trust that was lost. I was at a horse sale probably 25, 30 years ago, and I was talking to a father, and he had his 12-year-old son with him. I want us to think about this and how we lack self-awareness and how we don't think, and we're all guilty of this. I'm visiting with this guy, and in our culture, most of us wanted to go to horse sales with dad. And so here's this 12-year-old standing there, and we're talking, I'm talking to his father, we're watching horses selling. I asked him what grade he was in, and I think he said fifth. He said, fifth? And his dad said, yeah, but tell him the truth. And, you know, the hurt. 25 years later, I've never forgot this. That little boy looked at his dad, and he told him again. He said, but tell him the truth. And he didn't say a word, and his dad said, but he should be in sixth. He flunked the grade. I'm going to tell you, at its core, trust is about risk. What do you think happened 30 days later when that horse sale was again? Do you think that little kid 12 years old, he had to weigh out that risk. He had to think how much he wanted to go to the horse sale or how afraid he was of getting hurt. And why it's such a valuable piece, such a great attribute. Broken trust, and I'm past my time, so I am going to just close. I want to go to the last slide because this kind of does the whole deal where one of the guys said, "We got this, right? We got it figured out. We know how to get around this." I'm just going to go to the last slide here. And is that how we do it? We get it figured out like the little mouse. He's got a plan. And I put Proverbs on it. Trust in the Lord with all thy heart. Do not lean on thy own understanding. We don't got this. We need God in this whole thing. Thank you.